Hello, friends, and welcome into the Jayhawk Talk podcast. I am Kevin. Joined with me, as always, is Andrew. How you doing today, Andrew?
Pretty good, Kevin. This is our last podcast of February, which kind of, even though the regular season continues on, March is March, and that's when we got to step our podcast game up. So this is kind of a final tune-up for stretch run, the postseason of podcasting.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, 3 weeks now to Selection Sunday, too?
I think is it 3 weeks from today, 2 weeks from the Big 12 tournament. Yeah. So 3 weeks until the Big 12 tournament. Got two more weekends of basketball, Big 12 tournament, Selection Sunday. This is going to be quite the whirlwind, Kevin.
I'm ready. In fact, when you get to this point in the year, I don't know about you, but I just want to fast forward. Like, I get so stressed at the end of the year. I just want to get me to March, get me to the tournament. This time of year, these last few games just seem to drag on forever because I'm so jacked up about March Madness. I just wanted to be here. You know what I mean? Is that just me?
I think you're right. And when the players are getting ready too, I think Perry's finally getting himself tuned up a little bit after that dunk yesterday. We put out on Twitter because Perry was so aggressive with that alley-oop that he needs to get a tattoo.
He definitely needs a tattoo.
Because if you're going to be that aggressive and dunk over people, you have to have a tattoo. And so we asked on Twitter what tattoo Perry should get. And you have a couple that you like. What did you get?
Let's see. This is from I Am Andy B. I really like this one. The Spangles logo. So that'd be good. He's a Wichita guy. Spangles logo.
Spangles.
That could work, right?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. What about you? Do you have one there?
I think this came from in this morning. Non-fat Matt says the straight-faced emoji, the one with the line that just goes straight across the face.
That'd be pretty good.
I laughed out loud when I saw that. Just emojis in general. He could get the red-faced dancing woman just because he's got some – or the red-dressed dancing woman. Because he's got some moves in the paint, kind of like a salsa dancer.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from.
I think if we're going to go emoji. We're not going to go the 100 emoji. We're going to go with some other ones.
A little side note here. I read something today. Did you know that he has a nickname?
Perry?
Yeah.
No.
His nickname among his team. Ready for this?
I'm ready.
The Blender.
The Blender?
Yeah. This is a thing. He spins so much. And apparently, after one of his spin moves yesterday, and I didn't see this, he apparently, after he did, a bunch of, spins or whatever, and then got a basket, he pointed his finger toward the ground and did, a little twirl, with his finger. Brandon does his thing with the three deals and the,
blending a margarita.
Apparently, that's Perry's new thing after he does a blend. The Blender. The Blender is what we're going to call it. So watch for that.
All right. Well, maybe we just need to go with the Blender tattoo. I think that's got to win.
We might be getting there. A couple others. There was one that was another. Bitch on Perry Ellis, BIPE. That was from our friend Garrett Nice there. I think maybe my favorite one, though, is Only COD Can Judge Me. Call of Duty, because that's all he does when he's not on the basketball court is playing video games. Only COD can judge me.
Yeah, we've got some pretty funny listeners. If you have any other ones, feel free to send them to us, and we'll read them on the air next week if they're hilarious. But let's get on with the show, Kevin. Give us a rundown of what we need to talk about today.
Yeah, we're going to touch on the West Virginia and TCU games for a few minutes. We're not going to spend a bunch of time on it because I know everyone's more interested in the Big 12 race and getting to March and all those things. But we'll recap those games. And we're going to have Sam Vecini on from the CBS Sports podcast, Ion College Basketball podcast, and also writer for CBS Sports. He also is doing a lot of their NBA draft stuff. So we'll talk to him a little bit about a couple of prospects that the Jayhawks have. We're going to preview K-State and Texas. And then, Andrew, we got to start with this, too. The Watts Party. Tomorrow night, that's Monday night at Johnny's in the P&L. You and I are going to be there. We got several other friends of the podcast that are going to be there. We hope that you, the listeners, will join us. It's going to be a great time. We got a whole little section reserved. We're going to have free appetizers, drink specials. We got some giveaways too. So come and join us. It's going to be super chill, laid back. It's not, if you're coming by yourself, don't feel like you can't come by yourself. It's a good group. We'll welcome everybody in, and it's going to be a good time. So hopefully we will see you there tomorrow night, Monday night. The game starts at 8. We're going to be there around 7. So you'll see us. There'll be a little section. Come join us for the Jayhawk Talk watch party, and hopefully we can get us a win against K-State. Andrew, what do you say we move on here to some news and notes? Andrew, did you see JoJo White has been nominated for the College Basketball Hall of Fame?
Yeah, that's actually a thing that happened last weekend, and then we kind of missed it and didn't talk about it last week. JoJo White, I'm sure you all know, played at KU from 66 to 69. He won a gold medal with the Olympic team. That was in the Mexico City Olympics. Spent a majority of his NBA career with the Celtics. Seven-time All-Star and the 1976 Finals MVP, got nominated, and from what I'm hearing, it looks like he's probably going to get in. So that'd be great to have another Jayhawk in the Hall of Fame. His numbers in the rafters, names in the rafters and Allen Fieldhouse, but it'd be great to have him in the Naismith Hall of Fame as well. There are 15 players and coaches that have some sort of Kansas tie that are currently in the Hall of Fame. Of course, Dr. Naismith, Fog Allen, Wilt Chamberlain. And then, down the road, you could probably see another Celtic great, Paul Pierce, getting in. So, those don't come around too often. So when it does happen, you certainly have to celebrate it.
I agree. I'm always confused, though. Is it one of those deals like there's like the Naismith Hall of Fame, and then there's like a different College Basketball Hall of Fame?
This is the just basketball.
Okay, straight up basketball. Naismith, got it.
Right.
Okay. I always get confused by the different Hall of Fames.
Right.
Because there's like a lot of them.
There's the one in Massachusetts, and then there's the one in Kansas City, and the one in Kansas City is just the College Basketball.
I'm with you now.
Hall of Fame. Well, but that's cool. The Kansas City one's great. If you haven't visited it, it's
cool. One. Yeah, it's worth it, definitely. And then Thomas Robinson, Andrew, traded to Denver in that Aaron Aflalo deal. What do you think about where he's going to land now? Because Denver immediately bought out his contract. So
I've got a few thoughts on this. So he's no longer with Denver. He's a free agent to go sign wherever he wants. I just want him to end up in a place where he can get some consistent minutes and get a chance to prove himself, to get that next contract, because currently the Blazers bought out take up his the last year of his contract, so he's got to try to figure out where he's going to be, not only for the rest of the season but going forward, and I just want him to end up in a place that he can establish himself. But there's five teams that are interested. Let's run through a couple of them. It's the Nets, Spurs, Heat, Hornets, and the Phoenix Suns.
Yes.
Throw out everything that I just said about him, blah, blah, blah. I want him to go to the Suns with the Morris twins.
Yes.
This be a reunion of the FOE movement.
We might as well just get that whole team there. I mean, let's just make the Suns a KU team, because I really do need an NBA team. Like, I kind of go back and forth with several teams. If we get like four or five Jayhawks on one team, then I could finally, cement my my fandom in the NBA.
I think you're right. And I think that the Suns probably should be that team anyway, because the Morris twins are awesome. it's two Jayhawks on one team. But you put Thomas Robinson there, that's outrageous.
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, and our last little news and note is that College Game Day at ESPN will be in Lawrence next weekend for the Texas game. They're calling it the Kansas Road Trip. They're doing the pregame stuff in the morning at Wichita State for the Wichita State-Northern Iowa game. And then coming up to Lawrence in the afternoon, doing an hour pregame show in Lawrence before the start of our game at 3 o'clock. I think this is a cool thing. It's always great to have game day here, but I think that the folks at ESPN are severely underestimating how far it is between Lawrence and Wichita. And I know
it's a little trip.
I know that they've given themselves some time, a couple hours to get up there. But if there's some weather, they may not make it. And I did a little research just for comparison's sake. It takes longer to get from Wichita to Lawrence than it does from Philadelphia to New York City. I mean, so, but you would never think that, you know, oh, Philadelphia, New York City, like they're neighbors. They're, we can do two in one day from these two cities.
Right.
Just because it's Kansas. And, but, you know, they'll get Reese Davis and everybody's going to get a great view of I-35 and 335. So, you know, good for them. And I hope they enjoy their stay in Lawrence. But, and I, for the most part, I hope they make it in time.
Yeah, I think that'll be good, though. Obviously, you love having game day on campus. Splitting it with Wichita State kind of sucks, but it's better than not getting it at all is kind of how I feel about it. And I always thought this Texas game was going to be the one they were going to be at because it was going to be like a huge game. And then it sort of ended up not being as huge of a game with Texas kind of falling off a little bit. But we'll take it.
Yeah, I think we're getting 2 years in a row, which usually doesn't happen. So we'll take a half one. Even if it's, you know, getting it 2 years in a row.
Half game day.
Which is game day. All right, Kevin, let's talk about the games from this week.
Do it.
You cannot hope or wish good things to happen. You go make them happen because we are in attack mode for the entire 40 minutes. We do that, and we're going to have a fun locker room in about 2.5 hours.
Andrew, perhaps the most frustrating game of the season for me was that West Virginia game. We all know 62-61 loss in Morgantown. And the reason is not because of the ending or, you know, necessarily the, you know, offensive rebounds that they gave up or not playing Cliff or whatever. It was that this game should not have been close. West Virginia, I'm sorry, but I just don't think they're that good. I know they have a great record. We should have been crushing them. That press, I mean, the first couple minutes obviously rattled us. But the press didn't do anything the rest of the game. We were going right past it. We just couldn't make shots, and they were making some shots, and they're a bad shooting team. And actually, they didn't shoot that great. I don't know. To me, that team is just not very good. I think we're going to win by 20 in Allen Fieldhouse. But it was so frustrating because I just thought that, you know, as we got through that game, that we were going to pull away, and it wasn't really going to be a close game at the end, and we just kept let them stay in it. What do you think?
I think so too. And just to talk about the ending a little bit, well, it's not the 100% reason why we lost. It kind of sums up the feelings about the whole game, and that he had a layup bunny to win the game, but it rims out just because, you know, weren't quite in the moment to get it taken care of. So it should have been an easy game. Should have been a bunny that we could put in, but just couldn't make the basket go down. So I think it's, you know, that's not the exact reason. It kind of sums up my gut feeling on the whole thing. But, you know, it's not Perry's fault. Perry still had a great game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, that's a tough one to lose, especially when you, what's now going to become a close race in the Big 12. And just to talk about the rebounding a little bit, I mean, West Virginia had 22 offensive rebounds.
That's crazy.
Making it a rough night for the Jayhawks. And we'll probably talk about this later with Sam Vecenie, but there's this whole thing coming up about playing Landon and Jamari over Cliff in some of these situations. And I'm not sure where I fall on it.
I don't know either. And let's talk about that with him. But I'm with you. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, and I think you and I are probably on a little different than most KU fans. Feels like most people have a pretty solid answer when you're asking if Cliff should be playing more or not. But I don't know. To me, some of those rebounds were obviously pretty fluky. They were firing a lot of long jumpers. They were missing a lot of long jumpers. But still, I mean, 22 offensive rebounds, that's absolutely ridiculous. But anyway, let's get past that game. We always talked how that would be a tough one. It was a tough one, obviously, KU coming away with the loss. Did not, made it tougher in the Big 12 race. If they'd have won that game, it probably would have been very tough for anybody to catch them. But let's move on to this TCU game from Saturday. And the highlight of the game for me, Andrew, actually, I don't even remember anything else about the game except for Perry dunks.
That's probably pretty good because the rest of the game was pretty average,
right?
Mediocre.
I just blocked it out of my memory except for Perry dunks. What was your, the biggest storyline from that game?
I'm going to say, you know, Perry Ellis and Devontae Graham, those two guys, between them only missed one shot. And really carried the team the entire way. Perry Ellis ended up with 23 points, 7 rebounds, 9 of 10 from the field, which is, you know, great for him. it kind of goes to show you our expectations for Perry Ellis. And this is probably more out of respect, but, you know, he missed a shot at the very beginning of the game that I was just furious about. And I just remembered that shot, like, why couldn't he make that shot? Why didn't he make that shot? But by the end of the game, you know, he was 9 for 10. That's the only one he missed. But I was still furious about that one miss. So, you know, I think fans can get on Perry Ellis, but it's more of out of a, you know, utmost respect because we expect him to make every shot, which is obviously unrealistic.
The blender.
Just blending his way through the lane, scoring buckets. But, you know, Perry definitely stepped it up this past week, and I would expect him to be in the race for Big 12 Player of the Week again.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And talk about Devontae a little bit. What did you think from him yesterday?
Man, he was awesome. And I don't know. He's throughout the week has said something to the effect of, you know, I haven't been playing that well, and I needed to be more aggressive. This was by far his best game as a Jayhawk. He was getting in the lane. He was finding guys. He was finding Perry for some good looks. And then he was making shots. I mean, that's something we haven't really seen from him a bunch is, you know, his outside game. And he made a three long jumpers and was getting in the lane and finishing. And that was great, man. I think that this guy is going to be a fun Jayhawk to watch throughout his career. I think KU fans are going to fall in love with this guy by the time he's done with KU, if they haven't already. I think we found kind of a diamond in the rough with him and Frank together. Those two are going to be a lot of fun in the next few years. But I think he's, you know, we've talked about this a little bit. He's going to be a big player on this team, a complimentary piece to Frank Mason. When they're on the court together, you got two ball handlers. He had a bad game at West Virginia, really kind of a no-show, but good to see him play really well versus TCU. We needed him.
I think so. Let's talk a little bit about someone who played just 30 seconds of the game. Chris Huey, the team manager, got in the game. I think Bill Self wanted him to play him a little bit more, but the game was probably closer than he would have liked. But Chris Huey gets into the game wearing the number 23. It's pretty arrogant, Chris, to wear 23 in your first game. No, I'm just joking. But he gets a shot off. Doesn't get it, but it's probably a good experience for him. He is a guy, and you've probably heard the story, but just to go over it a little bit, who was the team manager for KU, but had played in college at the NAIA, was it St. Mary's University?
Something like that.
Up there in Northeast Kansas. And had to quit because he had three collapsed lungs, or a collapsed lung three different times. You obviously don't have three lungs, but... So came to KU and became the manager for the Jayhawks and is a part of the scout team and, you know, probably a real behind-the-scenes guy for this team, probably does a lot. And so Bill Self wanted to reward him by putting him in the game and got to put on that 23, got to put on that Kansas uniform, and probably a great experience for the guy.
Yeah, that was cool. And especially against TCU, you'd hope he'd get to play a little more than the last 30 seconds, but... He got a look. Self said after the game that, you know, Self said put the brakes on and he just powers onto the to the rim.
What are you gonna do?
You
bench
have
me?
To.
Are you
right?
Gonna bench me, Bill? You gonna
yeah,
bench
exactly.
me, Coach? I'm gonna go to the hoop. I'm gonna go to the hoop.
No excuse. That was pretty funny. But anyway, you know, also kind of funny. KU was right on the line, the Vegas line there. And if it kind of comes down to in Vegas, you got a team manager going in for a layup to get on the Vegas line, and he misses the shot. That's what's kind of funny to think about, actually.
That sportsbook groan, I can just hear it in my head.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right, Angie, let's talk about the performance of the week.
Here's the three. I'm telling you, he's in a zone right now.
I think you could put a blindfold on him.
We talked about this a little bit, but I do think it comes down to Perry and Devontae. I'll take one, you take the other, because to me it's kind of a coin flip. Who do you like?
Well, I think Perry Ellis. He averaged 21 points on the week, 6 rebounds. I think not only player of the week for the Jayhawks, but when Monday morning, if you're listening on Monday morning, see if I'm right and see if he's the Big 12 player of the week, because he certainly deserves it. He missed one shot yesterday. He was 7 for 15. Versus West Virginia. So great field goal percentage. He was really the aggressor in both of those games. And he's got to be the player of the week. And player of the week in the conference. If not the country, he, you know, had that type of week. If that bucket would have gone down, West Virginia, I think he'd be the player of the week in the country.
You want to talk about field goal percentage? How about Devontae Graham against TCU in his two games in his short career? He hasn't missed a shot yet. Obviously had 20 points versus TCU this week. Great off the bench, was definitely a spark plug, earned his minutes, played a lot of Kelly's minutes in the second half, but he kind of deserved it. So let's move on to the WTF of the week. I think you got a couple options here too, Andrew, and maybe I'll take the one you don't want. I think it comes down to the freshman. What do you think?
I think so. Just to go over it a little bit, Cliff played 17 minutes this entire week.
Yeah.
This entire week. I don't know what's going on, and I don't, but if we're going to be an elite team, he's got to be a contributor. And I'm not saying he needs to play 30 minutes a game, but he's got to be playing more than 17 minutes in a week.
Yeah, I agree. We're going to touch on that here in a few minutes, so I'm going to let that go. But I think you can also point to Kelly Oubre not having a terrific week either. 0 points in 19 minutes versus West Virginia.
That's TCU.
I'm sorry, TCU versus TCU. Whatever. We just mentioned that Devontae played a lot of his minutes, but he still played 19 minutes and didn't score for one of the best scorers on the team. I don't know. You want better than that from him. He played okay versus West Virginia, though, so we'll give him a pass there. He did have 14 points off 5 of 8 shooting and 7 rebounds. So I think I'll go with you and join in on the Cliff bandwagon. But, on that front, let's pause here a minute. Get Sam Vecenie in here. He recently wrote a piece on Cliff that we would like to talk to him about. So give us 1 second. We'll be right back with Sam Vecenie. We are back, and we are joined by CBS Sports' Sam Vecenie. You can hear him on the Eye on College Basketball podcast and also find his work on CBSSports.com. Sam, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm great, Kevin. How are you doing?
Doing well. Hey, thanks for joining us on this Sunday morning. I know out in California it's a few hours before us, so hopefully we didn't wake you up too early.
Oh, no. Like I was telling you guys before the podcast, typically whenever I record the Ion College Basketball podcast with Norlander and Parrish, I have to get up at like 6 o'clock, 6:20, and then get ready for a 7 o'clock podcast. So this is nothing. 8:30 to 9 o'clock podcast is just great for me.
Well, you need to tell those guys to move it up for you.
Oh, no. They've got way more going on than I do. So I'm last on the totem pole at the moment.
Fair enough. Well, hey, we had Norlander on last week to talk. He'd been on the podcast before. We wanted to get him back. And then we saw your piece on Cliff Alexander and thought, well, why don't we make it 2 out of 3? Maybe next week we'll get Parrish on.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be fun.
But we wanted to talk to you about this Cliff Alexander piece that you posted. And this has been something that's been going on for, throughout our area here, and especially on the KU Twitterverse, about Cliff Alexander's relative lack of minutes and lack of playing time, and his per minute numbers are just absolutely ridiculous. So you're looking at a game like West Virginia where he plays 6 minutes and we get out rebounded like crazy and give up 22 offensive rebounds. Why isn't Cliff playing? And it really kind of made that argument jump a little higher. So tell us kind of the basic tenor of your piece and kind of the point you were trying to make there.
All right. So yeah, basically I think that Bill Self, who is every time, I swear to God, every time that I start this whole spiel, I have to preface it with this, that I think Bill Self is a top 5 coach in the NCAA. I think he is absolutely terrific and he's going to win 1,000 games, probably another national title. He is great. Like I am not saying that Bill Self is a bad coach whenever I say this. So now that this is out of the way, I don't think he's utilizing Cliff Alexander right in comparison to who he has on the roster right now in Jamari Traylor and Landon Lucas at the center position. So this has nothing to do with Cliff Alexander's draft stock. It has nothing to do with you know, his future. It has to do with what he's shown Kansas and what he's shown the Big 12 on the floor right now. I mean, his per 36, the way the NBA goes, per 40 numbers are quite similar to if you would add Landon Lucas and Jamari Traylor's numbers together. So basically in 80 minutes, Jamari Traylor and Landon Lucas are giving you the same production as Cliff Alexander in 40. And then the other big thing is that I went through and I actually tracked every Cliff Alexander possession that he's played in Big 12 play this year. And this is before the TCU game, so I don't know how this will have affected it. But what I found is that Kansas is obviously better on offense. They were about 8.5 points better on offense per game with Cliff, or per 100 possessions with Cliff on the floor. And then they were also 4.5 points better on defense with Cliff Alexander on the floor. So it's not, you know, these numbers can be a little bit noisy sometimes depending on who shares the floor with Cliff. But what I do think that shows is that Cliff isn't hurting them as actively on defense as a lot of people think. And this isn't to say that Cliff is a bad is a good defender. He's not a good defender. He gets lost all the time. He can't really defend on the perimeter. He's really uncomfortable out there. But he does things for Kansas that a lot of that Jamari Traylor and Landon Lucas really don't, in that he rebounds the ball defensively, ends possessions. That is so big for this team that going into the TCU game yesterday afternoon was 208th nationally in defensive rebounding. And then he also blocks shots and protects the rim. No matter what you really say about him being getting lost on his guy, he does actually actively contest shots around the rim, either on the weak side or on his guy. And that makes for a much more difficult finishing around the rim for just about anyone else because he has a 7'4 wingspan. So I think that what we're finding here is that Cliff isn't hurting the team on defense, and he's definitely helping them on offense. I think, like, I think that's inarguable compared to what Traylor and Lucas are giving them. So I don't get it. I don't get why Bill Self isn't playing him.
Well, I think that part of the reason why you can see it, like when you're watching a game, you can see like, oh, Cliff's playing terrible. He needs to come out. But when you put the stats together, you know, that's not necessarily the case. And I think you have these guys out there like Charles Barkley who don't understand, you know, how these stats are put together and therefore just ridicule them. You know, this is what my eye sees, but these numbers are saying something different. Can you kind of go over a little bit about how you calculated this, you know, 8.5 points per 100 possessions on offense and then 4.5 on defense? Like, you know, what work did you put into it to get to that?
This was a week-long project. I watched every Kansas game in the Big 12. I then used the play-by-play function that Kansas or KUAthletics.com provides for you. And I was watching every game and had the play-by-play side-by-side. And every time Cliff would go out, I would be able to look at how many points he's given up on the play-by-play function of it. So, like, I could see how many points Kansas had given up while Cliff was on the floor during his time on the floor, during his time off the floor, so that I could then add it up into my Excel document. And then I'd be watching on the other side, keep watching, just like add up the points basically. So I could tell what his effect was when he was on the floor, or what the overall effect of Kansas was when he was on the floor and when he was off the floor. So basically I was just adding up points by having Kansas's play-by-play thing right next to the game footage. And I had to like triple check and make sure that everything was right and everything from the play-by-play footage matched up with the video.
That's crazy.
There are Kansas
fans. It was
fans,
literally a week-long project. I'm not going to lie to you.
I'll be honest. There are people listening to this podcast right now thinking that is the greatest job ever, where I just have to rewatch Kansas games.
Oh, no.
There are people who are just like immense with jealousy right now.
It's something I would absolutely not trade for the world. I love this job more than anything, but it's a lot of work. It was probably, I mean, however many hours Kansas games are plus three more.
Nice. So, well, you know, it's kind of interesting, and you know, we obviously mentioned this has been pretty a big topic on KU Twitterverse. I think Andrew and I kind of fall somewhere in the middle, and I think we're kind of in an area that most people are not. I think a lot of people have a pretty strong opinion on this. Either Cliff needs to play more, this is ridiculous, or the other argument is I'm going to trust Bill Self and his knowledge of his team, not you. And that's, yeah. I'm sure you've got a little bit of both of those on Twitter throughout the week. Is that is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, you know, and I get that Bill Self is far more intelligent than I am. Like, you don't have to tell me that, I guess, is my thing.
Right.
So here's the thing, though. Like, he's not above reproach. Like,
right.
Like, we shouldn't be deifying these coaches and making them to the point where you can't even question what they're doing. Like, coaches make bad decisions. It happens. Like, I totally, like, I shouldn't say that I don't understand why Cliff doesn't play, because I do understand why he doesn't play. Like, his gaffes when he's on the floor, like when he is missing rotations, he's missing them like
badly. Yeah.
And whenever he's like falling asleep on inbounds plays, like there was one in the West Virginia game where he just totally fell asleep on Devin Williams on an inbounds play, and Devin Williams just cut to the rim and he was like looking in the other direction.
Yeah, I remember that play.
And like I think that his gaffes look worse than they actually affect the team, if that makes sense. Like it looks really, really bad when he's off looking the other direction and Devin Williams cuts to the rim for a hoop. But that's 2 points, and that 2 points can matter. Don't get me wrong. I mean, they lost that game by 1 point. But here's the other thing. What he provides for you on defense with being able to end possessions, and what he provides for you on offense with being able to attack the glass and with being able to, you know, just generally finish around the rim, which is something that Lucas and Traylor struggle with. And it just helps. It helps Kansas more than it hurts them. And the other thing is here that with Jamari Traylor, we're talking about like a legendarily bad defensive rebounding big. Like in Big 12 play, his closest defensive rebounding rate comparables are Javon Felix, Jordan Woodard, and Phil Fonte.
Yeah.
So I almost think that someone like that is unplayable. Like, you think that Cliff Alexander is unplayable because he's making these poor rotations. Not being able to end defensive possessions is equally as problematic than missing rotations. So I don't get why people kind of, well, I kind of get it because Traylor always looks like he's playing hard, but like, I don't know why that's more defendable than Cliff missing rotations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, and it's almost a secret turnover. It's not going to show up in the stat sheet, but it's as bad as a turnover.
Yeah, and here's the other argument that I've heard from Cliff people, or from Bill Self people, that Bill thought that the pressure was going to be too much for Cliff Alexander, like West Virginia's high-pressure system. And I don't get that either, because after the West Virginia game, I ran the numbers, and Cliff's turnover percentage is literally half of Jamari Traylor's. Like, Traylor's turning the ball over on like 30 of his possessions, and Cliff's turning them over on like 15 and a half of his possessions. So I don't know why. Like, I get that Traylor is generally a more experienced player. He is a better passer than Cliff, but Cliff also doesn't turn the ball over. Like, we've seen that at this point, I guess. So I don't know where that argument really came from either. Like, I know that Bill said it, like, in a press conference, that that's why he thought that it would be useful. But, like, I don't know why he thinks that.
Well, yeah, it's going to be a debate that continues, and we'll see if he gets on the floor at all. But let's move on a little bit and talk about the tournament that's coming up. You know, I think we're 3 weeks away from Selection Sunday.
Crazy.
Which is it's feels like it's coming up quickly. Just before we start on it, how did you watch the tournament in college? Or when you were, you know, in your formative basketball years, did you have a routine? Like, what was your thing?
Let's see. What did I do in college? So sophomore year was I remember sophomore year very vividly, because we had friends who lived in this like big 13 person house. I went to Ohio State, by the way. And we had these friends that had this big 13 person house, and we just like went into their living room one day and just like watched the games from 12 until I guess probably midnight or so. And we just like left, we had drinks, we did all that. And I don't know if I want to go into detail on that, but we, you know, we drank the whole time, we had fun, and we just watched games, you know, like I wasn't writing in college at that point. So I didn't really like have, I didn't have any responsibilities. I could just go have fun and watch games.
Probably a little bit different now. How do you watch them now? Do you have like a, do it at home, or do you have like a CBS deal you have to do, or what's, are you going to be at, so, some, at a location?
First round, I'll be covering games from home. I'll just have to, I'll be writing the entire time. I'll be covering games from home. I'll have both of my TVs in my living room and then my iPad like up right next to the TV, basically, or like right in front of me, so I can get three games at once. And then yeah, I'll have to write off of all of these games. So it's tricky. I'll say that, like it's gonna be difficult. But
that sounds awesome.
It's, yeah, still, it's a fantastic job that I wouldn't trade for anything, but it's also a busy one come Selection Sunday and come the actual tournament games being played. And then the second weekend, I will probably be, you know, there's a regional in Los Angeles where I live, so I'll probably be there, and then I'll be at the Final Four, so.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about seeding, I guess. KU, probably still a little bit on the outside looking in. On a one seed, I think most places out there have them looking like a two.
Yeah.
But is there any shot? I mean, what would have to happen for KU to get back into that one conversation? Or is it pretty much sailed at this point?
You know, I was trying to figure that out, too. I think you'd need Arizona to lose at Utah. Because I think that Arizona still probably would be slightly ahead of Kansas in that rung. But it'd be really close. It'd be like one of those last minute decisions. It would probably depend if they wanted to send Kansas West too, even though Gonzaga is going to be West too. You would want Gonzaga to lose, I would say. You would want Villanova or not. Yeah, you would need Villanova to lose too, who I think Villanova is getting vastly underrated in all of these number one discussions. I actually think that they're probably going to be a number one seed by the time it all ends up, because I think they're going to run the table in the Big East. And you would also need Duke to lose, I think, and probably Wisconsin to lose. You'd need like four of those five things to happen, I think, for Kansas to end up with a one seed. I Virginia and Duke's probably going to sort itself out. Like, I don't know how Virginia is going to lose its grasp on a one seed, because if you look at their schedule, they have left really about like among difficult teams is. I want to say they have Louisville at the end of the year, and I want to say that's on the road too at Louisville. So even say they lose that game, even say they lose one game in the ACC tournament, you're still looking at a, you know, 27-3 team, 28-3 team, that has an incredible non-conference slate where they went on the road, they beat Maryland, they beat VCU, and they beat one other team, I want to say, on the road in non-conference. And then they basically ran through the ACC, and they're going to win the ACC, the non-existent ACC regular season title. So I think they're pretty locked in. Kentucky's obviously pretty locked in. So you have like a battle between Arizona, Wisconsin, Gonzaga, Villanova, Duke, and Kansas, which is six teams. And I would say that Kansas is probably fifth on that rung of six teams right now, maybe even sixth, depending on how you believe in Arizona or not, whether or not you believe in their schedule. So there's going to have to be a lot that breaks right, but I think that Kansas probably is pretty locked in on that two seed rung as long as they take care of business at this point.
I think so too. Let's talk a little bit about the Big 12. And I guess the question initially is how many teams will the Big 12 get? But I think that the real question is can Texas hang on and make the tournament? I think everybody else is, you know, kind of squared away, yeah, and it looks like they're going to make it in. But Texas, I don't know.
Yeah, that loss yesterday really, really hurt them, because they have what I would call a very difficult schedule coming up, because they have to go on the road here this week, both games in West Virginia and Kansas, and try and pick up a win. And as you guys know better than anyone, I don't really see anyone going into Allen Fieldhouse and winning, right?
Well, you know, they've picked us off once at a game day game, or at least a big time Saturday game. So when we all remember it, you know, I think I have a picture. I was on the cover of the Lawrence Journal World with my face covering, or my hands covering my face after that, after that loss. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that it's going to be tough for them to come in and get a win.
So yeah, this game against West Virginia Tuesday is really, really, really important for them, because I'm looking at their schedule. Their best road win is against, I want to say, Connecticut. And Connecticut's not an at-large contender at this point. Like, they're 14-11. They've kind of fallen off the map pretty much. So they're kind of in the same boat as, I want to say, Ohio State, but Ohio State has a little bit better of a resume at this point, in that they need road wins. Like, it's going to be really, really difficult to make the NCAA tournament without any marquee road wins. And this game against West Virginia, and to a lesser extent the game against Kansas, I mean, just because that's going to be a way more difficult game to win, they're vastly important to Texas. And I think we're going to be able to tell this week if they're going to be an NCAA tournament team or not. They need to at least go 1-1, I think. If they don't do that, I think you're talking NIT, to be honest.
Which is just crazy to think about. At the beginning of the year, this team was supposed to challenge Kansas and the rest of the top of the Big 12 for that crown. I think a lot of people chose him. Before we get out of here and see, there you go. I don't know what's going on with that team, but I guess we'll keep an eye out for him. But before we get out of here and let you go, let's talk a little bit about your NBA draft board. Sure. You do cover some NBA draft stuff for the CBS site. Just in terms of KU, you have Kelly Oubre. I think this is the last one you did, and correct me if this has been updated, but Kelly Oubre at number 11 and Cliff Alexander at 16. In terms of what you think, will those guys end up somewhere in the, you know, late lottery or, you know, mid-teens there? Or, you know, are these guys going to stick around? Like, what's your kind of vision of how these guys are going to end up, you know, coming into April and June?
So, yeah, I have Kelly at 12 right now. He's been really good since he's been playing, I think. I can't really overstate how impressed I've been with him at this point, you know. The jump shot's been effective. I still think it's a little bit streaky, I would say. You know, sometimes the release point isn't totally consistent, but it's still effective. He's still shooting, I want to say, like 39% from three, and that's enough right now. That's enough of a base to build on for NBA teams. Plus, you take into account the athleticism, the length. He's already an incredible rebounder from the wing. I think you're looking at a lottery pick for sure for Oubre, and it wouldn't surprise me if during this draft process, where he's going to get to show off all of these crazy tools that he has. He's so athletic, he's so long, that it wouldn't surprise me to see him pass Justice Winslow, who I have at 8 right now. Like, if Oubre went top 8, I wouldn't be surprised by any means. The better question, I think, is Cliff. I don't know. I mean, we can just bookend our discussions, I guess, with this. Cliff, you know, whenever I do my mock drafts, it's really hard to find a fit for Cliff. Like, I think that he's going to be a useful NBA big man, like a third big man off the bench who can rebound, who can finish effectively around the rim, and eventually who I think will be able to defend a little bit once he, like, irons out his rotations and everything. But, you know, whenever you do that mock draft, it's really, really hard to find a spot for him in the NBA because he's still a little bit of an undersized center. He needs to add that jump shot to try and be able to play the four a little bit more. You know, I think I had him at like 25 in my mock, even though I have him at like 17 or 18 on my board right now. So it's going to be really, he's going to be one of the more interesting cases in the NBA draft season this year, just because he is what he is at this point. He's a flawed prospect that has a ton of athleticism, and he has a ton of really good skills. Like, rebounding is one of the skills that translates from college to NBA, period. And he can do that. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see where his draft stock ends up. I've kind of cut the middle here with some people. Some people have him at like 14, 15. Some people have him like 25, 26. And I'm kind of cutting the middle here and having him at 17 and 18. And it wouldn't surprise me if I dropped them next time around, just because there are guys like Jaren Grant that are doing really, really well right now. Christian Wood at UNLV, who I like a little bit better right now. So it's really, really tough to see where Cliff fits, but I think he's going to have a solid NBA career. It's not going to be a spectacular one. Like, it's not going to be a top five recruit type NBA career that you expect out of those guys. But, you know, I think that he can carve out a niche for himself in the NBA and, be fine eventually. the question's going to be whether or not he stays and whether or not he thinks it's worth it to stay whenever Self is, I don't know if you want to say yanking him around, but he's not playing him as much as I think he expected coming into the season.
Yeah, that's the question. That's kind of a good way to wrap it up. You know, if Kelly's a lottery pick, and it sounds like all indications are that he probably would be.
Yeah, I think that's like set in stone. If he leaves.
Yeah, so he'll probably be gone, in my opinion. Would you agree with that, that he'd probably bounce after this year?
I would expect any lottery pick to leave. But yeah. I mean, we've seen it in the past, like guys like Jared Sullinger. He decided to stay after a big freshman season.
Sure.
And he ended
Marcus
up
just, Smart.
Yeah, like it happens where guys stay. But I think it's a safe bet to say that any guy, any freshman who is a lottery pick, lottery projected pick, should probably leave and probably will leave.
The Cliff one, that's the question. What's your prediction on whether he comes back for another year or whether he declares this year?
Yeah, you know, it's impossible to tell without having talked to the kid. I mean, I haven't talked to the kid, and I don't know what his thought process is, what it was coming into this. I mean, I'm sure coming into the season it was one and done, but I don't know what it looks like now after the way the season's gone. I guess I would predict that he would leave, because I think for a lot of these kids, it's really, really hard to wrap their head around, hey, I was supposed to be this one and done, and now I have to stay right for a second year. Like, I think it's hard for a lot of kids that were expecting that to wrap their head around it and actually for it to happen. So I would expect that, I wouldn't expect it, but if you made me make a prediction right now, I would say he leaves. But it's really one of those things that's going to be one of the more interesting discussions of the draft process and of draft declaration season. So I'm totally all in on finding this out.
Hopefully he just has a crazy good March, yeah, and you know, averages 18 and 10, and then we know right off the bat.
Mitch McGarry March.
Exactly. That would be fine. Yeah, we don't want to talk about that one. But hey, thanks so much for coming on, Sam. We really appreciate of course, we can find your work again at cbssports.com. We'll follow you on Twitter at Sam_Vecini. And hopefully we'll have you back on the podcast again sometime soon.
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. Awesome. Thanks a lot, Andrew.
Thanks.
All right, we are back. Thanks again to Sam Vecini for coming on and joining us on a Sunday morning out there in L.A. Of course, we'll catch his work on CBS Sports there. Great analysis, I thought. Kind of an interesting discussion on Cliff. Andrew, let's just put a bow on this. I don't know where you land on it, but I'm just kind of somewhere in the middle. You watch the game, you watch Cliff, you see him just make the most idiotic plays on defense. Like you said, just losing his man, and it sometimes he'll make it even just worse because he'll like do a turn, like, oh, there's my man as he's scoring, or like it's like over. I don't know. You just see it. Any KU basketball fan who has any insight whatsoever into basketball is seeing that and going, oh, Cliff, you know. But then again, you see his numbers, especially the per 40 minutes, and you see kind of the things that we're struggling with, like defensive rebounding, and you go, God, he's got to get on the floor. Where do you stand?
I don't know. I totally understand what you're saying. It's just, it's tough to see why he should be on the floor when those mistakes are out there. I mean, you can see it.
Yeah.
You see these numbers, and like, I don't see that. You know, like, that's a kind of a nebulous thing in the ether that, like, okay, we understand that these numbers tell us this, but we don't see it out there. So I'm kind of in the middle, although I do think he needs to play down the stretch if we're going to, you know, and play well. And yeah, maybe that's the caveat if we're going to be effective in March.
I agree. All right. Hey, let's talk about the Big 12 here.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
How about playing a little defense? You ever heard of that one, Stan?
BCS. Dollar signs.
This time of year, Andrew, we're all doing Big 12 title math. Four games left for most Big 12 teams. Four for us, two home, two away, and Iowa State probably our biggest threat. Also with four games left, they've got two home and two away. Their schedule looks fairly easy, though, compared to a lot of what it looked like this time last week when they had two tough away games, both of which they won. What do you think here? It's Iowa State at K-State, Baylor at home, Oklahoma at home, and at TCU. What's their schedule going to be? But what's their record going to be in these four games?
I don't know. You know, Iowa State's not a great road team, but you got to expect them to win those last four games, just because they're a much better team than all those teams, except for maybe Oklahoma, but they're playing at home. So you can't count them out up there in Hilton Coliseum. And just to touch on OU a little bit, they have their bye week this week. So they've just got three games left. They go two home games, one TCU at home, and then they go to Iowa State, as we mentioned. And then they play us last game of the season. It looks like that game's going to be pretty crucial for all parties involved. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that March 7th game, and obviously talk about it on the next podcast. Shape it up to be a pretty big one, Kevin.
Yeah, I mean, I think we just need to win out. I mean, I don't think Iowa State's going to lose any of those games either. It's kind of scary. It would have been nice for them to drop one this week. They had a pretty tough schedule. They won both games and kind of deserved to be in that conversation after doing so. Hopefully we can take care of business, but I don't know. It's starting to look a little scarier to get that title outright, at least. Hey, we talked about it a little bit with Sam, but let's talk on Texas for a minute, because that just seems like one of the most baffling stories in the Big 12 overall. They had a rough game against Iowa State this week, as we talked about. Really probably needed to win that game to feel a little more comfortable on the bubble. Do you think they're going to make it into the tournament?
I think that they will end up making it, but it's going to be by the skin of their teeth. This team, realistically, coming into the season, what, probably should be a 2-3 seed. I mean, they were ranked in the top 10 for a while. So it's just kind of baffling to see them end up this far down. They're 6-8 in the Big 12, on the verge of not being able to make it over a 500 record, which is just the last thing that I would expect to happen. And maybe we should have expected it. We've seen this from Rick Barnes teams in the past, but this team, just too talented to be where they are. But we'll see where they end up, they're going to be viewing in their heads this game at Allen Fieldhouse as a shot to prove themselves.
Yeah, that kind of scares me a little bit, honestly. I think I'm probably alone on this on an island here, but that KU Texas game scares me more than the KU K-State game, just because of that reason alone. K-State is out of it for the tournament, more than likely, unless they do some craziness in the Big 12 tournament. Texas, on the other hand, still has a lot to play for, and with K-State kind of being a dumpster fire right now, all across the board, Texas is the one that scares me, and their talent is there. We know it's there. It just seems like one of these days they're just going to put it all together, and they're going to play really well, and it's probably going to be against KU, because that would probably be what would happen. But anyway, what do you say we look at the matchups for this week? KU at K-State on Monday, Andrew, of course. And then Tuesday, Texas at West Virginia, a game that Texas probably needs to try to find a way to win. Wednesday, Texas Tech at TCU and Baylor at Iowa State, another big one. And then Saturday, we got Texas at KU, Iowa State at K-State, TCU at OU, Oklahoma State at Tech, and West Virginia at Baylor. Any of those games jump out to you as ones we need to tune into?
Well, maybe the Iowa State at K-State. It's always tough to go into Bramlage. We'll see how K-State does against us on Monday. Otherwise, it's kind of shaping up to be a three-horse race, unless West Virginia can kind of creep back in. But with OU only playing the one game on Saturday, KU K-State during the week, and then next week we'll see where we're at.
Yeah, that Baylor-Iowa State game could be interesting. Baylor's got the tools to win there. But, Iowa State's been playing really well. It's going to be tough. Andrew, let's preview the games for this week. Called up the homies and I'm asking y'all, which part are y'all playing basketball? All right, Monday, big Monday, KU at K-State. Before the season, this looked like it could be an interesting game, especially because we – on this podcast predicted K-State to be the fourth best team in the Big 12. But we're not going to talk about them being the fourth best team in the Big 12 because they are very much not. But they are, Andrew, still pretty good at Bramlage against KU. Doesn't really matter what the record is. The previous meeting was 68-57 in Lawrence. That was one where we jumped out to a pretty big lead, and then K-State kind of won the rest of the game. All the way, the rest of the way is pretty ugly. But man, things are ugly in Manhattan right now. What do you think here?
I don't know. It's always tough to go in there. I mean, we won, was it 22 or in a row at Bramlage? We hadn't lost since they opened in the 80s. And then, you know, recently, the past 4 years, we're 2-2. You know, with some, you know, if you remember that Valentine's Day massacre is what they called it. But really, this K-State team is not very good. And we should go into Manhattan and take care of business. That being said, you know, the fan base should be jacked up. They always get jacked up for KU. But, you know, if you go to the K-State message boards, which if you're just want a good laugh, you know, go to them. Like, there's, it's full of threads that say, like, who should replace Bruce Weber? Like, when does this coaching search start? Like, no one's really enthused about this basketball team anymore. That being said, I think that they're going to end up having a good crowd and putting on a good show. But, you know, we shouldn't lose this game. We got to go and take care of business if we want to bring home another trophy.
Agreed. I like the matchup on paper. I think this is a good game for us. Hopefully I'm right, but I don't know. I just feel like this could be a double-digit KU victory and never really be a close game. But I've been very wrong before on KU-K-State games, so I guess my prediction would be somewhere like a 74-64 KU win. What about you?
That's almost mirroring the first game. I'm going to go 70-55. 15-point win. I think that we kind of take care of business.
All right.
And show another purple team who's boss after, you know, I think the TCU game was fine, but we didn't play absolutely stellar. Let's move on to Texas. Previous meeting in Austin, we won by 13 points, 75-62. Seemed like a great win at the time.
Yeah.
And I still think it's a great win. But this, like we said, this Texas team's really just kind of holding on. Their KenPom ranking is still 21, which is pretty good in all being said. But Kevin, any prediction here for game day?
I think KU wins, but it's, I don't know. This is the one that scares me a little more, as I mentioned. I'll go like 70-66 KU.
It's a close one. I'm going to go repeat. I'm going to go 75-62. I don't know why. That's what
feels right.
That's what I want to do. Right. But so it'll be an exciting week. When we come back next Sunday, it'll be March. It'll be our first show in March, and ever closer to the Big 12 tournament, ever closer to the NCAA tournament and Selection Sunday. A couple things we need to talk about. We're going to preview senior night. That'll be, I think, a week from Tuesday versus West Virginia, and then OU to close the season, which will probably be a huge game. Kevin, let's talk about this watch party.
Yes, one more time. You got to come join us. We're going to be over there at Johnny's P&L, 8 o'clock game. We'll be there around 7. Like I said, there's going to be free appetizers. We got an espinaca order on every single table. We got another $50 in appetizers that we're going to throw down as well. There'll be giveaways, drink specials. It's going to be a great group watching the game out there at Johnny's in the P&L. Come join us for the Jayhawk Talk Watch Party. Third annual Jayhawk Talk Watch Party, Andrew.
Well, yeah, we've done a couple of these. Yeah. And they always have a pretty good turnout. And like Kevin said before, if you're by yourself, you're with a group, it's a good group of people who usually come out. We're all friends. We're all Jayhawk family members. It'll be a good time to have you out there. Before we kick the can here and get out of here, let's talk about the best way to listen to this show is on iTunes. You can go ahead and subscribe on iTunes. It'll shoot right to your phone or to your computer listening device, whatever it is. So go ahead and subscribe and leave a comment for us. If you like the show or don't like the show, just leave us a comment. Let us know how we're doing. We got one this week that we want to talk about from someone named RockChalk10. They said, not too gossipy and reactionary, like a lot of sports fans podcast. Also, the intro song is legendary. I kind of wish it were the closing song so we could hear more of it. Keep up the good work, Rock Chalk. That you're getting greedy, Rock Chalk 10, with the Space Jam song. You're getting greedy. You can't get open and close. But appreciate the comment.
At least Rock Chalk 10 gets it, you know, about the Space Jam song. We've heard a couple people not get it. And just a reminder, that's Space Jam at the beginning. That is what that is, and we're never ever changing it. So that will be our song until this podcast ceases to exist. But anyway, there you go. Well, thanks again to Sam Vecenie for coming on. We appreciate it. Of course, we can find his work again on CBS Sports, on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, and at Sam_Vecenie. You can find me at Jayhawk Talk, and you can find Andrew at Sherlock Hoops. We will see you tomorrow night, Monday night, at Johnny's in the P&L for another KU victory, hopefully against K-State. And of course, we will see you next Sunday in March on the Jayhawk Talk Podcast. Rock Chalk. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. I tried to tell them every time we on the court. I tried to tell them that we never coming up short. I tried to tell them that we came here to get the win. I tried to tell them that they should never let us in. They say that we the best, but I say we the greatest. That's why they try to knock us down and always seem to hate us. That's why they talk about us. They know they can never fade us. It's tradition and that Kansas pride that has truly made us. They know just how we feel. They know at Allen Field that we gon' keep it real. Shout out to Bill. This for them fans that waited off in them long lines, camped out before the games, and they stayed a long time. Every dollar that we spend just to watch our team win, on a Jayhawk shirt or a new clean Benz with a sticker on the back with the K and the U. Uh-huh, yeah, baby, that'll make you say, ooh. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see. Dr. Naismith made a game for man, changed lives for the players, and did the same for the fans. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. This for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby. All them years that we've been cheering, everything that we've been hearing, all them spreads that we've been clearing, never been no team we fearing, and look how Bill got us steering, all them tournaments appearing with no team that's interfering. Nine times get to cheering with them banners held high and the crowd going wild. Night before the Final Four, you can't even sleep now. Yeah, we at the peak now, we can't even leap down. March Madness, man, we've been waiting weeks now. If you a Hawks fan, go ahead and hold them ones high. Shout out to the boosters showing love and the alumni. I'm speaking for the fans, even though I'm just one guy. We appreciate the love, love won't run dry. Imagine the state of Kansas with no Jayhawks. That's like having no streets but trying to jaywalk. They see us as support and we see them on the court. So we keep it loud and do our best so we don't come up short. We win together and we lose together. But win or lose, we still booze together. Struggles in my life will change me as a man. But one thing that'll never change, I'll be a Jayhawk fan. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chalk Jayhawk in your faces. I ain't even gotta really say it. This one for the fans, that's why I made it. March Madness, here we can't be faded. Rock Chalk Jayhawk in your faces. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, it's baby. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. It's for my Jayhawk fans, for my Jayhawks. Hawks. And if you love it, then I love it, cause we Hawks, baby.